Now, adjust the volume control so that the sound can be heard in all parts of the room.
This is the Protect Your Assets podcast. It's the
Sandman. You get the idea? Bring me
a dream. It's on the internet.
Make him the cutest that I've ever seen.
Go on.
Give him two lips.
Like it's like no cheese I've ever tasted.
And tell him that his loss.
Here's the Sandman. Over
Sandman. When you retire, there'll be 12 types of income that get taxed in many different ways. And so if you're thinking about retiring this year, you're probably going to want to know what those are and what you can do about it before it's too late. So if you're thinking about retiring, or maybe you're already retired, then this show today is just for you as we go over how your retirement income is taxed. For those of you just joining us for the first time, welcome. People around here, they call me the Sandman. And that's because I help my listeners sleep well at night by answering their most troubled legal and financial questions each week. And that's because I am an attorney and run a financial service firm for 30 years. When you retire, do you know how much you pay in taxes on your income? Income like your Social Security, pension, dividends from your investments, distributions from your 401k, rental income. Spoiler alert, they are all taxed differently, and if you don't know the difference, you could end up paying more tax than you owe. Who wants to pay more tax than what's necessary? Not me. Well, join us for the entire show as we share 8 different sources of retirement income and how they are taxed. It's a brand new year. There are some big tax changes that just came through end of the year last year. Now they're effective. So now's the time to make some moves before you end up paying a lot more. Get a pad of paper and a pen and get ready to write down some facts that may apply to you. This is going to be a great show, so keep it right here. Now let's get started. Well, it definitely was a fascinating week on Wall Street as the Fed and other world policymakers battled against strong labor reports. The Dow finished the week down off a little bit, off 0.2%. S&P 500 up 1.6%. Year-to-date, S&P were up 7.7%. You may want to write some of these down. NASDAQ's up 14.7%. And the MSCI EAFE Index International, 8.5% positive for the year. Now, the NASDAQ finished the week up 3.3% and the MSCI up 1.2%. So from an equity standpoint, we're at some pretty hollow ground, I would say. We'll get to that in a minute. 10-year Treasury down 0.4%. For the week, it was flat. Oil dropped 8% for the week, down $73.23 a barrel. For the year, we're off about 8.5%. And bonds are still looking pretty good, up 4.2% year to date, down slightly with all the data that came out. So I know this has been a very interesting week, and a lot of people have been asking a lot of questions. So what does it all mean? Well, let me decipher some of the things that happened this past week, because it was a pretty big week. And I'm going to start with the labor report, because that's really what I think we need to be paying attention to more than what the Fed's saying. And I'll explain that in a minute. So yesterday, Friday, we had the economic report on the employment. And for January, we saw 517,000 jobs added. That was double what the consensus was saying. So it looks like labor is not slowing down. In fact, it's getting a lot worse. And the unemployment rate dropped to 3.4%. Now, that's the last time we saw any sort of unemployment like that was 1969. Markets reacted immediately to that, and the S&P 500 was off over 1%. So many of the gains from the week started to evaporate pretty quickly. And so a lot of people started saying, hey, what's going to happen next? Is the Fed going to be forced to continue to raise rates and hurt the stock market and really put a damper on the party that seems to have started so far this year? Well, what's the short answer? I think it's going to depend. And I think that they're going to raise rates more than most people think. And so I'm just going to tell you right out the gate here, expect volatility. That's what I keep saying. And you haven't seen it yet, but it's coming. So let's back up a little bit. We'll go back to Wednesday, which looked pretty good. We had Chairman Powell speaking for the Fed, and he said that they were going to raise rates a quarter point, which they did. And we've been talking about that for a while. He did that on February 1st. We know they're going to get back together again in March. And so I expect they'll probably raise again in March based on what we just saw yesterday. So through the tone of his speech, it appeared that they were starting to take their foot off the brake. Because right now they're on the brake, they're trying to slow things down. And it sounded like from his speech that they were getting less hawkish, the Fed now. And everything was looking pretty good. And that's why the market was rallying Wednesday and Thursday. It's why we saw what we saw. And then Friday, the jobs report came out. The most important figure that I focused on in that jobs report yesterday, and I think going forward that we have to think about, is wages. That's really what we're going to have to keep our eye on. Because what happened in the report from Friday was that the average hourly wage growth of what you're paying people in January went down a little bit. It went down about 0.4%. You may say, well, so what? Well, that's a good sign. As long as labor prices start to go down, that means that the Fed's policies are working. The interest rate rising is working. It's actually starting to slow things down, maybe slower than we'd like to see. And that's the answer to the problem. In other words, we went from 4.8% in December to 4.4% in January. With higher interest rates, higher costs to run your business, that just means there's less to spread around. There's going to be less money to pay people, which means wages will start to continue to deteriorate. And as that happens, the market will slow down, just a matter of fact. So what I'm trying to say is this is going to be longer than everybody thinks. It's not going to be as easy and as fast as many would hope. And so the key is going to be this moderation in wages, and that's what we got to keep looking at. Now, consumers are still out there. Economy's still moving ahead. Unemployment obviously still looking pretty good. But I'm still not saying that the recession's not going to happen. And I think that if you look on the numbers that we're seeing and the slowdown that's coming, I am expecting a recession. I think it's going to be milder than a lot of people think. But your stock prices, you know, expect some downward. And we'll get into that in a minute as far as what I'm seeing and what I think as far as numbers go. But that's why I started at the beginning saying, look at your year-to-date returns. They're not so bad. And maybe it's time to do something about that. Now, what about in Europe? Because Europe, like we said at the top, had a pretty good year-to-date so far. You know, the EFI's up 8.5%. It's not bad. And if you look at the ECB, European Community Bank, which is their Fed, and you got the Bank of England now because Brexit, right? So Bank of England's in control of England. And you look at their two banks, they've been following ours. They've been raising rates like we have to sort of slow down what was going on there. A very similar sort of dialogue. And so when you have this world economy, you got to pay attention to both markets. And we saw some surprises because for the past several months, the dollar has been declining against the euro, the pound against the yen. And this was on the idea that the Fed were going to transition from most of these hawkish major global central banks being more hawkish. And that sentiment was challenged on Thursday. Well, how? Well, the ECB and the Bank of England came out and they said, we're going to raise rates 50 basis points, like we said. Okay, great. But then the Bank of England said, this is it. We may not do it anymore. We could be done. And that was a surprise. And you also had the ECB saying something very similar, which was, you know, we're going to think about it as well, too. It's working, but we may start to back off as well. So from a stock and bond standpoint, that churn, if you will, the positive correlation that's happening between the euro dollar or just the euro, right? Euro versus dollar, just what's going on with that as rates are lowering in the U.S., the dollar is not as powerful against other currencies as it used to be. So that's going to be a benefit to their currency. It's called it's a extra currency boost. That could help our stock prices. But again, these are battles that are going on between European markets and U.S. markets as currencies start to fluctuate based on what's going on in policy. So that's why you're seeing sort of this unknown of what's going to happen. It's just sort of a battle between these two areas, like a football game, right? The ball's moving back and forth. We're trying to see where it's going to land and what might happen. Maybe you get a bad call. We'll talk more about that. Anyway, so the German Bund, which is a lot like our treasury, get this, it dropped pretty hard on that news on Thursday. It went from 2.29% down to 2.07. This was the largest single day drop we've seen in a very established European country drop since 2011. Think about that. It was pretty significant, and that happened in one day. So this tide is turning, and it could propel stocks higher or lower. It just really depends. Well, what does that mean? You've got to set yourself the limits we talk about. And so on the S&P 500, I know we closed at 41.36. The resistance now on the upside is 41.99. Even though you get companies like Meta reporting good earnings, and you have some like Snap not, you see this continued deterioration in some companies, and that's going to affect the markets. So if you're one of these technical people, 41.99 is your next threshold. If we pass through that, I'm looking at 43.05. If we drop below 4.002. Expect 3899. What about past that? Well, 3800. So I've raised from the 34 level, but I think through the recession, through the pain, this is going to drag on for a while. I just want you to know that. It's not going to be over fast. I think that's where the market's got it wrong. I don't think we're going to end this year with much lower rates. I don't think that's going to happen. You're going to see the Fed continue to just, slowly come off the brake. And let the whole economy turn. It's this, if you drive cars, you know what I'm talking about. It's called threshold braking. And that's the technique I think the Fed is using right now. And it's working a little bit, but patience. It's all about patience. Coming up next on Protect Your Assets, is it better to take your Social Security income first or your pension when it comes to taxes? Find out when I come back. You're listening to The Sandman on the Protect Your Assets Show. We'll be right back.
Take the first step toward reaching your financial goals and get the information that can help you live a confident retirement. That first step is going to pyaevents.com and signing up for our next free event. That's pyaevents.com. Now, back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Welcome back. I'm David Hollander, also known as the Sandman. And our goal is to help all of our listeners live a more productive, less stressed life when it comes to your money, taxes, and estate planning needs. I've yet to meet a person who wants to pay more taxes. Everyone wants to keep their tax bill as low as possible each year. And if you don't understand how your sources of income in retirement are taxed differently, then you could easily wind up paying more in taxes and not even know about it. So why give more than your fair share? It's not likely they're going to spend your tax money wisely, right? Too often we see someone withdrawing money out of a higher tax account versus a lower tax account. We see retirees withdraw money in the wrong order, causing them to pay extra taxes. And we see people claiming their benefits too early, or in some cases too late, not being tax smart. And guess what? Do you think they end up paying more taxes in the long run? In the long run? Yes, they do. Of course they do. So stick with me this morning as we talk about how your retirement income is taxed. Now, before we get to that, I got an email. Like I said, if you have questions during the week, you want to ask me a question, shoot me an email at questions@pyaradio.com. So this question comes from Mike. Now, let me give you the facts, because he wrote me about 3 pages worth of information, and I'll just boil it down for you. So Mike asked me this. Here's what happened. Mike's mom passed away, and Mike has a sister named Sally. And it's just Mike and Sally as the kids. No more dad, just mom. Mom passed. There was a trust. Now, mom named Sally as the trustee of the trust. And Sally now wants to move into mom's house. let's say the house is worth about $3 million and mom has about $500,000 in savings. So the house clearly is worth a lot more money than the total estate. So here's what Sally's thinking about. They've been talking about Prop 19. As you know, I talked a lot about that, where mom dies. Mom didn't set up the special type of trust that we do to protect it from this. She didn't do it. So now what's going to happen is the house is going to be subject to Prop 19, which means that if the house is worth about $3 million and mom was paying, say, $3,000 a year in taxes, well, the tax rate's going to jump up to $30,000 plus. Now, the goal of this was for Sally to move in the house, get the $1 million credit, still have to pay the difference, maybe $20,000 in taxes, but refurbish the house because it has nothing's been done to it for quite a long time, clean it up, make it look nice, and then sell it, and then split the money with her brother. Now, Mike's question is, now that mom has passed away, do we have to put the house in Sally's name because she's going to move into it to get the benefit of this Prop 19 exemption? That's one question. Good question. The answer is no. Second question was, well, if Sally does own the house or she's in the house and she hires her buddies because that's the contractors because they want to pay the crazy contractor rates right now. Sorry, guys. It's just nuts. So let's just say it's, you know, whatever it's going to cost for a builder to come there and do the work, but she's got a buddy who's a project manager and she's going to be the general contractor and work with the manager and get the price knocked down by a third. They can afford that, so they're going to do that. That's the route they're going. Mike's worried that if one of her contractor buddy comes in and hurts himself with a skill saw or a nail gun or something, they end up suing Mike. And Mike's saying, I don't want that liability because I have my own stuff. And, of course, Mike's wife is concerned because she doesn't want any of that, and she knows what Sally's all about. So she says, I don't want any of that. I don't want it. I don't want the liability. Good point. Because you're not protected, Mike. Okay. So these are all really good questions. What do we do? So something that you could do here, Mike, would be I would suggest that you have your sister give you a promissory note. And she agrees to pay you roughly half of the estate. She's the trustee anyway, so she has the responsibility to make sure you get your fair share. But if you don't want the liability, you could just transfer, as part of this whole wrap-up of the estate, we could just transfer the house to Sally, let her take on all the liability, let her get some of the Prop 19 credit, because at this point she's you've all lost that. It's too late. I wish you would talk to me before. Anyway, so you're still going to pay the increased tax, but anyway, that's on her. And if she signs a promissory note where she agrees to pay you, say, a certain value at that point in time, great. You can put an interest rate on that note. And as long as it's fair, then you've got a good situation there. You may say, well, what if she gets more on the house sale than what it's worth today? Well, you've got to take some risk here, and maybe that's it. So there are ways to do this. This is obviously more complicated estate, and I would recommend you give us a call. And Mike, I hope that helped. But thank you for your question. All right, moving on. Let's start out with the most common source of retirement income. That is Social Security. Now, last week's show, we went into some pretty good detail on that, and I don't have time this morning to do it. So there's how they're taxed. Some Social Security recipients are not. You heard me right. They are not subject to federal income tax or state tax on their benefits. But others, and most of the people that I see and talk to, aren't so lucky. And they could pay up to 85%. You heard me right. 85%. Think about it. 85% of your Social Security benefit being part of your taxable situation. Yeah, that just doesn't seem right. So here's what you do. You have to determine what's called your provisional income. And what you do is you look at your return when you get home, pull it out on your 1040, and look at line 9. Then you add to that your tax-exempt interest. Yes, a lot of people think just because it's tax-free, it doesn't affect your Social Security, but that's not true. You have to add that tax-free income to your provisional income. And then what will happen is it looks at 50% of your Social Security benefit on top of that. And when you add all these things up, if your income is less than $25,000 as a single person or less than $32,000 as a married couple filing jointly, then your Social Security benefit is tax-free. Now, to live in the Bay Area and even pay rent or a mortgage or your food bill and energy costs for a month, I know that's not realistic. So If your income is between 25 and 34,000 individual, 32 and 44,000 as a joint filer, then 50% of your Social Security will be taxed. Now, if your provisional income is more than $34,000 as a single person and more than $44,000 as a joint filer, this is where you get stuck. This is where it gets the 85% of your benefit becomes taxable. Now, most people I talk to fall in that category. So should you take your pension first and wait on your Social Security? In most cases, the answer is yes. Because there's all sorts of reasons behind that. Again, we have a limited amount of time, but I'm now going to shift to pensions. Pension payments that you receive from either a private payer or the government, they're fully taxable as ordinary income when you receive that money. So that's why you have to play this game of, do you take Social Security first or later, and how does that structure in with your overall income? It's not that simple, but you need to do that. Now, what about your 401k or your IRA? I know you love those. As you're working, it's tax deferred. You put money in there. It doesn't show up on your W-2. In fact, I just got my W-2 and I saw on there, here's my 401k contribution. And yes, I made X amount, but now I get to just completely deduct that. It's not there anymore. And now it's being reported or what I'm paying taxes on. It's being reported, but I'm paying taxes on the difference, right? And that feels good because I didn't pay tax on that. Well, they're tax deferred. And at some point, all those savings, the dividends, the gains, they're growing tax deferred, meaning they're compounding and they're growing over time, hopefully. And you're going to pay taxes on those when you start to take those out for either living on or just because you have to. And at some point, you can't delay it anymore. It doesn't go on forever. We're talking about the RMD, the required minimum distribution. Now, that currently starts at age 73 because the law just changed the end of last year. I'm sure you've heard that news. So if you work past age 73, you still can delay taking your RMD from your 401k, but not if you rolled it to an IRA, you can't. So don't do that. Be careful. I got a whole nother show on that issue. And that's providing that you don't own more than 5% of the company that you work for. Withdrawals from your IRA or your 401k are taxed at ordinary income tax rates, meaning you got to just add that to the bottom line. Payouts before age 59 and a half are taxed at a 10% penalty on top of your ordinary income. Did you know it might make sense to take that withdrawal from your 401k before your 73rd birthday? One way to make sure you're doing the right thing with your retirement is to know if your 401k and IRAs are on the right track to provide you with lifelong income at the same time keeping your taxes low on all your other income. Have you thought about how to get more out of your retirement? How much income do you need to maintain your lifestyle in retirement? What should you do? Well, hope is not a strategy. If you aren't sure about how you can save taxes on your retirement income and how you're going to put it all together, then you probably could use some help. Now, where we're different than most other offices around here is that we have lawyers, we have tax people, and we have financial advisors who all work under the same roof. This is a concept I've come up with many, many years ago. I've been doing this forever. I'm an attorney myself. Now, why that's different is as we sit down and look at your whole situation, we can actually map out for you what taxes you're going to get hit with and how it's going to affect you way before it happens. And I don't know about you, but I hate surprises. And the last thing you want to be surprised about is paying a bigger bill, right? Right. And you can't get a second opinion from the guy who gave you the first opinion, particularly if they're not licensed to help you in this area. So if you want to keep more of your money, let's just be straight, then you need to take action right now and you have to give me a call. It's that simple. 866-PROTECT. Protect more of what's yours. Don't give it away. 866-PROTECT to find out what you're missing out on right now. This will not cost you a nickel to find out, but you have to call us right now. 866-PROTECT. My team's sitting here right now ready to talk to you. Give them a call. Set up a coaching session and find out how to score. 866-PROTECT. Now, coming up next on Protect Your Assets, it'll be time for our They Say segment. You're going to love this one, where they say high-yield savings accounts or CDs, which is better when it comes to taxes right now? The answer may surprise you. There's so much more to come. It always pays you to keep it tuned right here. You're listening to The Sandman on the Protect Your Assets Radio Network. We'll be right back.
If you missed any of Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, all you have to do is go to pyaradio.com where you can download or listen to our latest shows for free. Just go to pyaradio.com on your computer or mobile device when it's most convenient for you. That's pyaradio.com. Now back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Protect Your Assets. I am David Hollander, also known as the Sandman. And our goal here is to help all of our listeners live a more productive, less stressed life when it comes to your money. The one thing that affects your money all the time is taxes, whether you think about it or not. And as you know, I hate taxes. Now it's time for one of our fan favorite parts of the show, our They Say segment, where we debunk common myths, half-truths, and sometimes just bad advice that they say.
Who are they? What do they know that I don't? And what are they saying this week? Here's David Hollander, the Sandman's answer.
So here's one they say. They say that high-yield savings accounts and CDs are paying great rates right now. But how are these bank accounts taxed? Do you really make a good return after tax? What do you say? Well, that's a great question. And so let's talk out with how interest-bearing accounts are taxed. First of all, ordinary income tax rates apply to interest that you receive on your CDs, savings accounts, money markets, high-yield savings accounts, corporate bonds. But municipal bond interest is federally tax-free and can be state tax-free as well. Capital gains rates may apply if you sell that municipal bond at a profit, and this could happen if interest rates drop. Now, I talked about that at the top of the hour, and if you missed the market segment, go back and listen to that where I was talking about rates, because you do want to get on the right side of that. So how might you think about this type of investment before you bought it? Well, let's say you were looking at a one-year CD, maybe right now, and it's paying you 4%. You live in California, and with state and federal tax, your combined tax rate is 40%. So after you earn that 4%, you're really only earning 2.4% because taxes are taking 1.6%. Ouch. So is it better for you to buy a California municipal bond paying 3.5%? Well, yeah, it very well could be. Particularly as you start to add your other sources of income in there, like Social Security, maybe a pension, maybe rents from real estate. What about a tax-deferred investment paying 5%? Maybe you don't need all that interest, but you still want to make something on your money because you don't want to lose it to inflation. Well, that might be a way to go. So it really gets down to how you stack up all of your different retirement income sources and when you take it. Now, what about life insurance? How are proceeds taxed on that? Well, any proceeds that you leave to a beneficiary of a life insurance policy when, if you're the insured, you pass away, those are generally not taxable. And the tax rules are more complicated if you're the holder of the policy and you surrender it for cash. There are some policies, though, that have the ability to take tax-free loans out of them and use that as income and not pay any tax on that income. And then when you pass away, the death benefit could still pass tax-free on an income standpoint, not estate tax potentially. But again, these are ways where you could, again, create income that doesn't hurt your bottom line. Now, what about sales of stocks, bonds, and mutual funds? How are those taxed? Well, if you sell stocks, bonds, or mutual funds that you've held for more than a year, those proceeds are taxed as long-term capital gains. And that could be zero, which is my hero. Could be 15% or 20%. And if you compare that to, say, the 40% I was just talking about, well, that's a big difference. The 0, 15, and 20 rates on long-term capital gains are based on income thresholds that are adjusted annually for inflation. Now, for 2023, the 0% rate applies to individuals with taxable income up to $44,625 on a single return. $89,250, you heard me right, $89,250 for a joint filer. And then if you happen to go over that, you're looking at a 20%. And then if you're over 553, now you get up into the higher rate. So this is where you've just, again, got to structure the income and structure how you sell your stocks before you pay the tax. Now, don't forget, there's also a 3.8% surtax on what's called net investment income, NII. And that goes on top of the 15 or the 20% capital gains rate for the single taxpayer and for the joint filer over $250,000. So if you sell investments that you've held for a year or less than a year, those gains become ordinary income, and that could really hurt. And remember, if you sell at a loss, that loss can offset any capital gains you had that year, which right now, remember at the top of the hour, we're talking about the market and how you possibly made some money back. You might want to take some of those gains, but realize that you may only be limited to $3,000 a year if you don't have anything to offset it. Then you would carry it forward until you make more money again. Are you wondering about how you take your retirement income right now? How you do what I just talked about? I know, it'd feel great, wouldn't it, to know that you're doing everything right, to squeeze every cent out of what you pay the government? Well, if you're like most people we meet, you probably are not on top of these sort of things, because how can you stay on top of all the tax rules that change all the time and just be in control of all these income sources? Unless you have something automated that's worked and shows you these numbers, how could you possibly do it? Well, we're happy, more than happy, to show you how we do it using our own tools that stay on top of these things. And we give you access to those so you can see it for yourself. If you want to see what I'm talking about, we're more than happy to give you a test drive. This will absolutely cost you nothing to see what's possible. Think about it. Cars drive themselves now. Don't you want to see the same type of technology that works on your portfolio? It exists. So give us a call right now and see how we do it. 866-PROTECT. Come on, do it. Pick up the phone. Call me. 866-PROTECT. We are local. We'd love to talk to you. And we just want to help. 866-PROTECT. It's time for a quick break. When I come back, how is real estate sales? How are those taxed? Well, you don't want to miss this one, because if you're thinking of downsizing, you're going to learn something. It pays you to keep it right here. We'll be right back.
Take the first step toward reaching your financial goals and get the information that can help you live a confident retirement. That first step is going to pyaevents.com and signing up for our next free event. That's pyaevents.com. Now, back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
We're back. I'm David Hollander, and you're listening to Protect Your Assets this morning. We found the number one key to financial success in retirement is how to control how you pay your taxes on your income. Because let's face it, the government takes more of your money. Well, it's less for you to do the things that you've always wanted to do. And even if you love working, even if you love your job, everything's going great, you got to think about the next 10 years. Because what you do right now will change the course of your income in the future and how you pay taxes on, let's face it, the government wanting more of your money and continuing coming after you. So if that's important to you, then hey, get in front of it now. It's not too late, because our job is to help our clients keep more of what they own. Protect your assets, after all. That's what it's all about. All right. During today's episode, we've been sharing how your income gets taxed in retirement, whether you like it or not. And if you're thinking about right-sizing your home, since now the kids have moved out, you're getting ready to retire, you don't really need that big of a place. Do you know how it's treated tax-wise? Well, don't ever make a financial decision without understanding the tax consequences first. Please remember that. You can find out before you do things what they're going to cost you from a tax perspective. Don't wait until April and you get the bill and you're like, oh my gosh, what happened? And I've already spent the money. So a home is often your biggest and most valuable asset, particularly in the Bay Area. Let's face it, values have gone up quite a bit. And when you sell your primary home at a gain, which most of you do, then there are taxes that the government wants. Now, if you've considered this your personal residence for at least 2 out of 5 years before the sale, then if you're single, you can exclude up to $250,000 of gain from your income. Now, if you're married, you're both on title. Notice I threw that in there. It's $500,000. And so any gains that are above that, which again, a lot of you are facing that, those are taxed as long-term capital gains as long as you meet those tests I just talked about. Now, losses are not deductible. But what if you want to stay in your home, but you just can't afford to do that? Well, maybe you need some cash. We do have clients who have these big, valuable houses, had successful careers, but unfortunately weren't great savers, and now they need money, any cash. What can you do if all that equity is tied up in the ground? There's several different options now, not just reverse mortgages. Reverse mortgage, there's something called an equity sale, a percentage equity sale. All these sort of things exist now, and we are working with a company right now that can analyze all that data and show you which might be the best situation for you. It's something that's new and pretty exciting. So remember, payments that you get from a reverse mortgage on your home are treated as non-taxable loan proceeds and not income. Also, you cannot deduct the interest you will eventually pay when you satisfy that mortgage unless you use the original proceeds to buy, build, or substantially improve the home that secured the loan. You know that nagging question that just about everyone feels as they get close to retiring? The constant wonder in the back of your mind, do we really have enough? Well, what I'd like you to do right now is to take a deep breath through your nose, exhale through your mouth, and if you're not driving, close your eyes. And picture a day when you don't have to worry about money, taxes, or what your uninformed friend tells you. Picture a day when you're standing on the slopes in Switzerland thinking about the Wiener Schnitzel you're going to have for lunch. Your son yells out to you, Dad, let's race to lunch. Picture a day when you can relax, travel, and do all those things that you've always wanted to do. We are here today on FanFest to talk to you. So call us, 866-PROTECT. What are you waiting for? 866-PROTECT. It's just a conversation. Talk to an experienced member of my team right now and get answers. Finally, 866-PROTECT. I'd like to give a big thanks to the Protect Your Assets team for putting together a great show today. My executive producer and network manager, Kevin Renfer, and of course, all of my fabulous producers back there, Danny, Phil, Cam, thank you guys, because without my team, I'm just another pretty voice on the radio. Thanks again, everybody. You have been listening to the Protect Your Assets Show. I am David Hollander, the Sandman. Go out and make the rest of your life the best of your life.
Investment advisory services are offered through Liberty Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. The strategies mentioned are not suitable for everyone. The information expressed does not consider your specific situation or objectives and may not be appropriate for all investors. Past performance is not indicative of future results. To better understand the risk associated with investing and how it reacts to different market conditions, listeners should always consult with their qualified investment professionals, financial advisors, legal or tax specialists, and conduct their due diligence before making any financial decisions or taking any action. The legal information provided on the air is not intended to substitute for callers hiring their lawyers to advise them about personal legal matters. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Liberty Group LLC paid for the following program, and the host's views and opinions do not represent those of the station or its ownership. California Life Agent number 048569. Persons engaging the services of one affiliate of Liberty Group LLC companies should be aware that each company is operated separately. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Radio Network.